of the rule.
Yes, I ran over that child. It couldn't be helped. To avoid running over the child, I would have had to cross a double yellow line. And rules are rules. Well, fear not. There is a better way than rules.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Let me recall a story from one of the last seasons in which our congregation participated in organized softball, and I think there are others present who will remember this story. We were in the field. There was an opposing runner on first, and an opposing batter smacked a hard grounder to shortstop, which Mark Clapper moved to scoop up, and it was just one of those things. The ball took such a bounce that it ramped up the heel of his glove and hit him right in the forehead. He went down like a felled ox. At this point, according to the rules, we probably should have called a timeout. That didn't occur to us. Russ Thorne left the mound, and I left second base to rush over and see if Mark was okay, which he was after a couple of minutes when he recovered from being stunned. But in the meantime, while the ball lay on the ground where it had stopped rolling, completely unheeded by any of us, the runner who had been on first had gone to second, rounded third, and was headed home. And I heard a bunch of shouting. I'm pretty sure the voice I remember most was Amy Berner. Shouting that somebody was running for home. We were all just standing around out there in the field. And I turned around real quick to see two things. One was that this guy from the other team was just a few steps from home plate. And the second was that Josh Van Voris, I think about 15 years old at the time, he was catching, but he wasn't catching at the moment. He was standing on the plate, arms down at his side, looking out to shortstop to see if Mark was going to be okay and get up. And he was just standing there completely oblivious to the fact that this guy was coming down the baseline toward him. And I watched this guy a few steps from home plate drop his shoulder and pick up speed and bulldoze Josh off the plate. There was no play. The ball was laying on the ground. Josh went flying, and he was dazed for a little bit, and I expect his ribs hurt for a while afterward. And there was a lot of upset right at that moment. And the umpire got into the middle of all the shouting, and I got the impression that there were other things he would like to have said, but here's what he did. He warned Josh, "You can't stand on the plate when you don't have the ball." We had not called time out, and you can't block the runner. The rules are the rules. What was done was not right, but it was in accordance with the rules. Now, I will add only this. It is apparently also not forbidden by the rules for Russell E. Thorne to start every time a certain batter on the opposing team came to the plate again, start throwing pitches over the backstop or dribbling them on the ground. until that guy became infuriated and Russ would throw one that was just barely hittable if he swung way over his head and the guy would hit it and it would dribble out into the center by the mound and he would be an easy out. That's apparently not against the rules either. At least the umpire didn't say anything about it. Rules. We find them necessary. We want rules to prevent people from injuring us physically or injuring us financially or slandering and injuring our reputation. We want those rules. We have those rules. I'm not supposed to hit you. I'm not supposed to say vile, foul things about you. I am not supposed to steal your identity and drain your bank accounts. All these things would be against the rules. But I'm going to tell you, there will always be a few predictable problems with rules. First, rules must multiply because there will be the original rule, and then there will be all the subsequent rules that are issued because people found ways to game, get around, and seek loopholes in the original rule. It's one of the reasons that we have a 70,000-page tax code in this country. Second, there will always be a subset of people who want to perpetrate the forbidden injuries, and they will figure out that the best way for them to get by is to join the rules committee, to get themselves in a position where they can help shape and issue the rules in such a fashion that the rules will justify those bad things that they want to do. And third, there will invariably arise a moment when obeying the letter of any particular rule will actually violate the spirit of the rule. Yes, I ran over that child. It couldn't be helped. To avoid running over the child, I would have had to cross a double yellow line. And the rules are the rules. Well, fear not. There is a better way than rules. And we'll come to it shortly. In the meantime, we are still working our way through the gospel according to Mark. We are up to chapter 2, verses 23 to 27, though in this instance, I think I can also get a little bit of chapter 3 in here while we're dealing with this passage. Let me begin by noting that there were some rules in force at the time which we should understand better if we want to really understand the passage. First, when a Jew of the first century walked down the lane by the wheat fields, it did not matter that he did not own the wheat field. It did not matter who owned the wheat field. He was allowed as he walked to reach over and pull some grains by hand to munch on as he went along. Now, you were not allowed to bring a sickle and wade into the field and set up shop, but you could pull a handful or two as you went to have something to munch on as you walked. You will find that rule in Deuteronomy 23, verse 25, rules. Second, back before the building of the temple, when the portable tabernacle traveled around the nation of Israel, there was this thing called the shewbread. It was a dozen loaves of bread set on a little low golden table before the holy place there in the tabernacle as a permanent offering to God. The baking of those loaves would be assigned to different families in different territories as the tabernacle traveled around. And the bread only stayed there for just a few days, and then it was taken off, and fresh loaves were put in its place. And the loaves that were taken off became the property of the priests who were on duty at the time. And only those priests, properly, ceremonially purified for their duty at the moment, were supposed to eat the shewbread. You will find those rules in Exodus chapter 25, verses 23 to 30. Third and finally, no Jew was supposed to work on the Sabbath. You will find that rule in Exodus chapter 20, verse 8. But remember, rules must multiply. No work on the Sabbath? Well, okay. But what happens if my ox falls into a deep ditch on the Sabbath? If I leave him there for 24 hours or maybe longer, because the days actually were reckoned to start at sunset and you might have to wait through the night. If I leave him there for 24 hours or maybe even longer, he's likely to break a leg trying to get out on his own, and I will be out an ox. So what if my ox falls into a deep ditch on the Sabbath? Aren't I allowed to do something about that? There were opinions about such questions. So the scribes and the rabbis undertook to write a virtual encyclopedia defining what constituted work and what exceptions might be made for what circumstances. As far as work goes, I will shorten it by telling you that they finally described work as any form of any one of three things: bearing a burden, using a tool, or accomplishing a task. If you were bearing a burden, using a tool, or accomplishing a task, you were working. Okay, but what constitutes a burden, a tool, or a task? You can see where this is headed. A needle doesn't weigh enough to be a burden, but it is a tool, especially if you're a tailor. So if you're a butcher and you picked up a needle on the Sabbath, that was probably not going to be a problem. But if you were a tailor and you picked up a needle on the Sabbath, you were in violation of the law. Your teeth were not considered to be a burden because they are a natural part of your body. But if you had false teeth, and they had them then, carved out of wood, if you had false teeth, those things were not a part of your body. They were a burden. So if you had your natural teeth, you could chew whatever you wanted every Sabbath, all Sabbath long. But if you had false teeth, out they came to sit on the counter, because you can't walk around with a burden in your mouth and you got to live on applesauce until the next day or something like that. Well, the apostles didn't seem to be using any tools to pluck their handful of grain. I will make the generous assumption that none of them had false teeth. I will make the further generous assumption that they did not pluck more than an ounce or so of grain at a time, so that it did not constitute a burden. Nevertheless, they were apparently guilty of accomplishing a task, and probably accomplishing more than one task. The same scribal rules that set up the definitions for bearing a burden, using a tool, accomplishing a task, set 39 separate categories with lots of subcategories to define accomplishing a task. And here are the ones the apostles would have been guilty of: reaping, that is, removing any grain stalk attached from the field; winnowing, that is, sorting out the grains from the portion of the stalk that you broke off when you plucked it; threshing, that is, removing the external hull to get down to the internal kernel; and preparing a meal, which would count everything you just did, unless, of course, you weren't going to eat the grain, you were going to throw it on the ground, in which case you became guilty of planting on the Sabbath. So from the point of view of the encyclopedic scribal law that regulated the fourth commandment to death, the disciples of Jesus just committed at least four separate violations. Look, the Pharisees shout, why are they doing that which is not lawful on the Sabbath? Now, the first thing I want you to understand, this is probably discouraging, we're this far in and I'm saying the first thing. The first thing I want you to understand is something that I hope that everybody who was present for last Sunday evening's Bible study on Galatians chapter 3 could tell you. The covenant of the law handed down through Moses on Mount Sinai was never our covenant. That was an arrangement for the Jewish people in reference to their residence in the Promised Land. Never our covenant. That doesn't mean that it is now okay for us to murder or steal or anything like that. And if you need me to explain why that's not okay, even though that was never our covenant, you come to me and I think I can make you understand that. But you should also understand this. We don't ever have to worry about circumcision one way or another from a moral point of view. That was not our covenant. Pork, in any of its myriad forms, does not constitute any sort of problem for us, morally. because that was never our covenant. And even when you get to the big ten, the Ten Commandments themselves, we should not see the Lord's Day, which we are celebrating now, as an extension or reformatting of the Sabbath, and those work regulations should be even more meaningless to us than they should have been to the people to whom Jesus was talking. I'm just telling you, I never get myself worked up because somebody mows their grass on Sunday. That just doesn't bother me. Now, all of this doesn't mean that we don't need and wouldn't profit from a day of rest. It especially does not mean that it isn't a good idea to set aside a regular time at which time we will, free from other distractions, concentrate on our relationship with God and seek to worship Him. I'm not saying that this is no longer a good idea, any more than I'm saying that it's no longer a good idea to refrain from murder. Those are good ideas. What I'm saying is, rules-based morality will always go wrong in the same predictable ways, and there is a better way, and God has given us that better way, and we should at least begin to see the better way in the threefold answer that Jesus gives to the Pharisaic protest, why are they doing that which is not lawful on the Sabbath? First, Jesus wonders if the Pharisees have recently read the 21st chapter of 1 Samuel. Because there was this time while David was fleeing from the wrath of King Saul that he passed in haste through the town of Nob, where the tabernacle happened to be at the time. And he had just a few minutes and he spoke to the high priest Abiathar, "Isn't there something that we could have to eat?" And it had to be something fast because they were not that far ahead of the pursuit. And the only thing available right now on short notice was the shewbread. Now, we're talking about the bread that had already been taken off the table. They weren't taking the bread from the holy place, but it was supposed to be eaten by the priest, only by the priest. And David and his companions were not priests. The story is further complicated by the fact that David kind of stretches the truth about what he's doing in Nob to begin with. He tells Abiathar, "I am on a secret special mission from the king." The only mission David had from Saul at that time was this: eat dirt and die. So if that qualifies as a special mission, I guess David was on one. But I feel like David kind of stretched the truth, misrepresenting to Abiathar why he was there and where he was going. And I will adopt the point of view of God and say that all men are liars or thieves or sinners of whatever stripe. God does not restrict his work with men to non-sinners, because that would be to say he just can't work with men. So set aside the lie for a moment, whether or not David was justified in his dishonesty. Jesus indicates that he was justified in eating the shewbread to save his life. Five of those loaves disappeared down the throats of David and his companions as they fled Nob, one step ahead of the executioner. Sometimes some of us might be inclined to argue the point. Surely there was some other way. There had to be some allowable food that David could have gotten his hands on, and the rules are the rules. But Jesus used the instance of David and the shewbread as a bridge to his second point. The rules are not just the rules. The rules are an expression of God's love for those who are incapable of receiving a fuller, truer expression of God's love at the moment. Now, I realize Jesus does not fully expound this thought here in Mark chapter 2, but he begins it. And if you read on and take this in conjunction with other things Jesus said, you will see the point. What he did say here was, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Here is the beginning of the thought. Why did God give the fourth commandment? For the sake of men. Because a day of rest is good for men. It's good for us physically. It's especially good for us spiritually to take that day in which we set aside the pressures of making a living and concentrate on our relationship with God, because it is good for us to have a good relationship with our Maker and the Lord of heaven and earth. So God gave us the fourth commandment because it is good for us, and He had to give it to us as a rule because we had progressed far enough in our fallen nature that we have to have the things that are good for us mandated. Remember point number 4 on my daily mantra. Every plan of Satan is 180 degrees opposite a plan of God. Satan will always encourage us to conduct our lives in ways that are bad for us. It is not the plan of God that we should work ourselves to death, or that we should only care about work or money or accomplishment. The guy who leads us down any of those paths is named Satan. But because we will not have more of God's love than this at the moment, He gives us a rule to encourage us in the way that is good for us. Shame on us that we need the rule. And as I told the kids, it's kind of like needing that rule that says, don't hit yourself in the head with the hammer, dummy. It's bad for you. The rule is given for the sake of men. Which is to say, men are not created for the sake of the rule. But Jesus and the Pharisees had differing interpretations of this scenario. And the Pharisees would say, oh, you're hungry, I get it, you're hungry, and I know everybody has to eat, we all have to eat. Well, too bad, it's the Sabbath and the rules are the rules. Should have thought of that before. Even worse, as we proceed into chapter 3, if you read ahead, okay, so you're sick and you're dying, and Jesus has the ability to heal you. I can understand why that's important to you, but did you know that healing the sick falls under one of those 39 categories of accomplishing a task? You really should have worked it out so that you met the great physician on some day other than the Sabbath. Sorry for your luck, but the rules are the rules. Was the Sabbath instituted to bless man? Or was man created to ornament the Sabbath? Jesus and the Pharisees would answer that question differently. I'm going with Jesus. And it isn't just the Sabbath. That was just the rule du jour. The rule the Pharisees were bothered about at the time. A little while ago in this same gospel account, we found them all bothered about the rules of fasting. And a little bit further in this gospel account, we will find them all bothered about the rules of washing hands. They are always going to be bothered about some rule or others because they thought the rules were the thing. All rules are the same. All God's rules, anyway. The rules that God gave us to govern our sexuality are given for the same reason as all the other rules, because there are ways of conducting our sexuality that are good for us and good for the people around us, and there are ways that are bad for us and bad for the people around us, and we have progressed far enough in our fallen nature as to need to have the good for us part mandated, or we won't do it. Shame on us for needing the rules. But that said, the rules are made for men and not men for the rules. God made rules because he loves us, and we aren't ready to receive a fuller portion of that love yet. But to listen to some people, you would think that God made the rules first and then he made men because he needed somebody to show off how wonderful his rules were. That's not only putting the cart before the horse, that's putting the cart with the square wheels before the horse. You're never going to get anywhere like that. So the first two points of Jesus' answer to the Pharisees, one, remember the story of David and the shewbread. Two, the Sabbath was made for the man, not the man for the Sabbath. And point three, the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. I've told this story before, and probably not all that long ago. I can't always remember, but I always like the story that I read once about a tour group of Frank Lloyd Wright's famous water house, this house designed by the famous architect. The tour guide kept explaining to everybody one detail or another and the purpose and the benefits, and he had to keep raising his hand to hush some member of the tour group who seemed to want to take over and expand on what he was saying or correct him on some points. And toward the end of the tour, he finally just got frustrated with the whole thing and said, "Look, buddy, I'm the tour guide because I am a third-year student of architecture at the State University, and I have taken classes specifically about Frank Lloyd Wright. Who do you think you are that you can correct me?" And the man answered, "Well, I'm Frank Lloyd Wright." God made rules because he loves men. But let me ask you, if God made the rules, who is the Lord of the rules? It's not a trick question. God. And if God made men, who is the Lord of men? So if God is the Lord and maker of both men and the Sabbath, and Jesus is the Messiah sent from God, a claim inherent in his using the title Son of Man for himself. If Jesus is, as he will soon say, God in person, then it probably does not pay to argue with the creator of the Sabbath and of men about the relationship between men and the Sabbath. You know, there are still moments at which people might look at us in the church today and decide that we care about rules more than we care about God or men. It is sad to say, but you can still make that case time to time. It is no less true now than it was in the day of David or of Jesus. All men are sinners. None of us have kept the rules. But you need to remember something. We were lost sinners long before most of the rules were ever written. And the rules really come down to just two propositions. Love God with all you've got. And love other people at least as much as you love yourself. Taken together with other things Jesus said, it can sometimes be phrased this way. The rules are this. God loves you. Love him back. And God loves them. Love them too. The man who can do these two things, or the woman either, will never need another rule in their life. Love God, love men, and there is no need for rules. Shame on us for needing rules. More shame on us if we come to love the rules more than we love the God who gave them or the men for whose sake they were given. There is a better And the Son of God, the Son of Man, the Son of David, the Messiah, the Lord of the Sabbath, the Lord of us all, came to lead us into the better way. Are we following him there? Or is it all still just rules?
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.